Hello and welcome into the latest edition of the Rebel Room. I am Taylor Byrne, joined as usual by Case Kiefer and Ray Brewer, here to break down what is going on in the middle of the UNLV football season, look ahead a little bit to basketball as they ramp up practice, work on that full court press, get ready for Mountain West Media Days. As we record this, it is Monday, October 12th, and on Tuesday we will find out what the preseason poll has for the Rebels. And we talked about a little bit last week that I had the team finishing third. I had Pat McCaw on the first team. Based on the reporters' polls that I've seen so far, I think the Rebels are going to end up being a little lower than that. Maybe fourth, could be even fifth, depending. I think it's just a lot of people upset that they've picked them top three a lot of these years, and it hasn't really happened much. But the first team is basically going to look like either Anthony Drimmick or James Webb. You'll have maybe an A.J. West, but Winston Shepard from San Diego State, Jalen Moore from Utah State. I'd actually be surprised if anyone from UNLV ends up on it, for the main reason that I think you could go a lot of different ways with the vote. Some people maybe go with a Steven Zimmerman, the freshman, Ike Nwamu, the senior guard, who could end up leading the team in scoring. I went with Pat McCaw, who I think is the best overall player at both ends. But that's some of what's going on this week. We'll have coverage of that. Ray and I will both be at the – where are we going for that? The Renaissance, Las Vegas?
On Paradise. I think it's across from Gordon Biersch, if I'm not mistaken.
All right.
Maybe
a little midday lunch for Brew Crew and I. We will have to see. But that's what's coming up on the website throughout the week. But it is still football season. The team coming off of I don't know what to call the loss exactly, because at one point I didn't think there was a chance that they'd even be in the game. But then it ends up being sort of a disappointing loss because they had it. But Ray, just what's sort of your takeaway here from the 33-27 overtime loss at home to San Jose State?
You know, I think UNLV showed great resilience in coming back, making it a game, especially in the last minute. They needed to drive to get into field goal range, and they were able to do so. So that is a positive. I thought the defense on the touchdown that San Jose State took the lead on in the fourth quarter, I thought was way too risky. I thought they blitzed a little too much. I think on the tying touchdown, the whole, is it right side or left side?
It was the left side.
This is the screen.
Yeah. It was fourth and 10, essentially the game. If UNLV's defense had held, San Jose State most likely would have still had enough time to get the ball back. But that was essentially the game deciding play there. Fourth and 10 from the 21. UNLV had blitzed on the first three downs. They send the house again on fourth down. And just, I personally tip your cap to San Jose State there. I understand people second-guessing the call. Like, you know, you sent pressure this much, wouldn't you expect San Jose State to react to that? I think it's – I like being aggressive, and, you know, credit to San Jose State for getting the screen pass to Tyler Irvin. He went untouched behind a bunch of defenders there. But UNLV, despite Kurt Palandek screwing up on the third down there, taking a sack when you really can't take a sack, it turned a 42-yard attempt to a 49-yard attempt to tie the game with there was about 16 seconds left when the play was snapped. But credit to Nikolai Bornand, hit it, send it to overtime, but then his kick was blocked in OT, and San Jose State ends up scoring a touchdown to decide the game.
And cover.
That's an important. That I had that in my tweet afterward, and there was one fan, a person who hasn't liked me for years, who said, "Who cares about that?" And I wanted to remind him what city he lives in, that there are very, very many people who are concerned about that, especially when they were very happy with Sanchez's 4-1 ATS record coming into the game. But as they turn ahead to Friday at Fresno State, an incredibly winnable game. Fresno State is not good this year. I had said last week that, and I think this was the gist of my point, at least it's what I meant it to be, no matter the result of this game, I still feel about the same for UNLV's remaining schedule, which is good. You know, when you look at the opportunities they have, what they could end up being, I think they've got a lot of chances here, and a loss, because I was expecting it against a team that I think is a little bit better, wasn't going to be a big negative to me. Case, where are you at now with them 2-4 overall, 1-1 in the Mountain West?
Yeah, I mean, I was pretty positive about this performance. I think they played well. You know, it was a coin flip game, basically going to overtime. So you're disappointed with the loss, especially with coming back. But I mean, I still think you got to be pretty high on UNLV. This was a game at Fresno State. You looked at the beginning of the year. I think this was even the one where we talked about over-unders. Like, this will probably be the Mountain West when they win because Fresno State is awful. And going back last week, I thought it was important to get out of this San Jose State and at Fresno State. I mean, it is still a road game. I thought it'd be important to win at least one of the two, and they're still in position. So really, this game doesn't change much for me as far as what UNLV's future prospects are.
Yeah, this was the game that I ended up picking as my double-digit upset. I thought UNLV would win one game when they were at least a 10-point underdog. That ain't what the line is anymore. I think that the number had been around 9 or 10 in July when the Golden Nugget released some lines, but it is now UNLV, I think, -3.5.
I thought it was 6.
Oh, did it jump up even that much?
Five. Just okay. Checked, yeah.
Last night, at least the number I was seeing around, and these aren't always entirely accurate, but I was seeing UNLV -3.5, and so now UNLV -5. I think it shows you how much Sanchez has been able to accomplish at this point, and also, you know, how far Fresno State has dropped.
Locked in on talking points, July 30th, UNLV +13.5 at Fresno, one of our preseason bets. So I'm feeling pretty good about that one now. I could get if this wasn't a fictitious bet, I could have a 18.5 point middle.
Was this just a bet you made with yourself, or was this something that Ray was a part of?
No, this just our conference betting.
What do you mean Ray was a part of?
Well, because we make all kinds of bets throughout the year.
Our conference betting previews. I did six preseason bets for every conference,
okay.
And I hated Fresno State looking at this team. I think it was one of the great mysteries. I mean, I guess the Mountain West was pretty bad last year too, but they just totally fluked winning the division last year. They looked even worse on paper this year. So really, I'd love to like pat myself on the back and say I knew UNLV was going to be this good. It really was a play against Fresno State at the time.
Yeah, the division was bad last year. It's probably worse this year. The conference overall is definitely worse this year. But I think because of the reasons we were just talking about there, I think I ended up having Fresno State second in my preseason poll in the West, because after San Diego State, I was looking around. I knew I didn't want to go with Nevada, and I just didn't know who else. And Fresno State, oftentimes, even if they're not good, can just – I think I just had the, you know, the previous season in my mind. They just end up there, even if they're not a good team. But they have fallen apart quite a bit here. They're going to go with redshirt freshman quarterback Kilton Anderson. At least that's the word out of Fresno early in the week. They haven't had much success, no matter who's been the quarterback. So sort of like the San Jose State game, I'm not sure that who the opposition ends up picking at quarterback matters a whole lot. San Jose State ended up going with Kenny Potter, which kind of surprised me. I thought Joe Gray had played well enough that he would stay in there. But Potter, after a tough first half, ended up looking really good there down the stretch. I posted these numbers on Twitter, and I'm not sure if you saw them, Ray, but after Tyler Irvin's fumble on a punt return, and that was early in the fourth quarter, and that's kind of what changed the game. Everything was going San Jose State's way for the second and third quarters, and that jolted UNLV and brought them back in it. But after that point, quarterback Kurt Palandek, who got his first career start at Division I and played the entire game, after that point he went 8 for 12 for 153 yards and a couple of touchdown passes. Is that any indication that he's improving, that he's got this thing now, this performance to build on, and the mistakes, the two interceptions he had, there were at least three more that could have easily been picked off but were dropped. I mean, does the end, the numbers leading the team back, does that make you feel any different about Palandek than you did going into the game?
Yeah, I mean, of course, anytime you have that kind of success in the fourth quarter, you have to change your tune a little bit. You know, with that said, UNLV obviously a better team when Decker's in the lineup. The fact that they didn't pull the red shirt on the freshman Saturday indicates they likely won't do it the rest of the
year. I think they shouldn't do it now.
Yeah.
Like, I've been adamant for 3 weeks that I think they should pull it and get the kid reps and build him, and because I think they would need him this year yet if they're going to try and push for 500 and push for, you know, some attainable goals this season. But now that you're halfway through and you didn't bring him out for a game, and maybe you know, Palandek did have good numbers at the end, maybe lost a game partially, you know, because of your quarterback play. Now I don't think you do it for the season.
And if you would have, if they would have lost, I think, what, 20-10 or whatever it was, then we could have had the debate, why didn't they do it? And
well, I think you can still very much have that debate.
Well, I think the fact that they came back and took the lead and should have won if it wasn't for a rare mistake by the defense. Can't believe I said that when talking UNLV football, but the defense has been pretty darn special.
Well, I thought you were going even further and was going to say a rare mistake by the coaching staff, which I would disagree with, but that's what it seemed like you were going with when you were complaining about the fourth down blitz earlier.
Yeah, if it's a mistake, it's the coaching staff, not the defense. They earlier in the third quarter, they kind of fell apart a little bit, had a couple of missed tackles. Blake Richmond and Penny Vaio have had really good seasons, you know, got exposed on just a couple of plays. But on that fourth down one, they didn't do anything wrong. There was just a great call on the other side. So I think if you have a dispute with it, it's with the staff and not the players on that one.
Either way, I think that San Jose State had a pretty good shot at the end zone. But going back to our first point, I think the fact that UNLV was patient, they're always going to try to establish the run, and then Kurt turned out to be pretty darn good in the last 10 minutes or so. You know, that has to have you feeling good about yourself, but eventually you need to start winning games, and you got to figure out if Decker, in fact, is your guy moving forward in terms of his health.
Yeah.
We're all curious to see if he's going to be able to go tomorrow during the press conference to find out how he's feeling. But without Decker in the lineup, it's, you know, UNLV's chances to win just aren't there. And who knows if this redshirt freshman is – I mean, all indications are he's going to be good. Everybody seems to like, and it looks like he's got some swagger at least. But you plug in a guy for the first time in college football, he's not going to be Tim Tebow.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a mystery box. But that's always been the point. I think you know what you have in Palandek, and there's potential with Snead. And that's why I've always kind of leaned towards doing that. No, I think you can absolutely still have that debate. Just because Palandek had some good numbers towards the end, I don't think that means that he's any different than he was coming into the game. You know, he had one huge play on – it was a 45-yard connection – 45 or 49-yard connection with Kendall Keys on a broken play, third and 12, and it was huge. And part of that, you know, is his running ability. There was a defender sprinting up towards him as Palandek rolled to the left – and that defender stopped about 5 yards away and gave Palandek time to set and really find Keys and get that ball away because the defender was just afraid of one juke, and all of a sudden Kurt just runs for the first down. So that's an element that he brings, not that Decker can't run a little or that Snead couldn't be mobile, but Palandek is very good with his feet. He's quick, makes some good decisions with that, but I just don't know that the tools are there to be able to consistently succeed in the passing game. I mean, like I said, he had the two interceptions, both of them bad, and a couple more that were really bad throws that very easily could have been picked off. So I think the debate is still alive, but it's only looking backwards. I think now that you're halfway through the year, you know, each game that you go, it becomes more and more, at least on paper, damaging to pull a red shirt because you're not even giving him the chance to kind of work into games. Like if something were to happen to both Decker and Palandek, you know, at two games from now or something, then at that point you don't have an option, but then you're just throwing him in when you really need wins and you need him to be up to speed right away, as opposed to working him in a little more slowly, which is what I wanted them to do. But either way, credit to UNLV for making this a game, nearly pull it out in overtime. And the field goal that was blocked in overtime on Bornand, that also was a little longer. Not that it, you know, couldn't have been blocked from closer, but both at the end of regulation and in overtime, Palandek took sacks on third down that made him longer attempts. And so just kind of the decision-making there too, you know, Sanchez, as soon as Palandek came to the sidelines both times, just, you know, arm around the shoulder, just sort of looking at him, talking to him, like, you can't make those types of mistakes.
And then you go back to the Reno game, they're milking the clock at the end, and he runs out of bounds to stop it, if you remember.
Yep.
And then Reno drives all the way down. If the tight end doesn't drop the ball, Reno probably wins that game.
Yeah, that was a big play.
That was a huge error.
I can't remember which NFL game it was yesterday, but I saw sort of a similar situation play out where someone either called a timeout at a time when you probably shouldn't have there. It wasn't the Eli Manning one.
Wasn't Kaepernick called one?
No, it wasn't that game. Okay. It was something earlier in the day. But it just reminded me, and it ended up really hurting them, and it reminded me of the Palandek play where, you know, the Rebels got away with that one, but that was an extra 40 seconds for the opposition that could have damaged them. But overall, I you can nitpick stuff, and that's what we just did there for a while, but I feel pretty much the same about UNLV today that I did last week, which is mostly positive. Mostly, I think they can compete in this division, in this league. I think they can get at least 4 wins, and, you know, beyond that is reasonable. But I definitely expect them to go to Fresno and win this game. Well,
I tell you what, it's a lot more fun talking UNLV football. And this is nothing against Bobby, because I love Bobby. You guys knew that. But for some reason, just the fact that UNLV seems to be improved, definitely more organized, coupled with the league being historically bad. I think you could argue that this is the worst the Mountain West has been in its 14 or 15-year history. And I think part of the reason, and I don't want to dissect the league too far, but you remember last podcast I was talking about the glory days of the league, Utah, TCU, BYU, all good teams, right? They're out of the mix, and now it's a bunch of teams who have similar problems. You know, lack of resources, right? Coaches who are relatively new to the profession, or coaches who are making around $100,000 a year, which in coaching isn't much.
Well, no head coach in this league is making $100,000.
No,
a year.
Assistant coaches, coaches, okay. Yeah, right. No, $100,000, yeah, of course. I mean, but I think the league, this is how it's going to be moving forward, and I think UNLV could be in an advantage because they seem to have a few extras, if you will, that other schools don't. So it's definitely getting.
What are the extras?
Well, I don't know, the recruiting by playing, the.
And you're just to clarify, you're talking the private plane
private
and, you know, kind
plane,
of all
yeah,
all
going
that.
On a private plane to recruit
to Las Vegas instead of Fresno.
Exactly.
That didn't matter for a local kid last year or in the past 6 months.
It's true. I feel like the way Tony Sanchez is, and this has been talked to death, so I don't want to talk about it much, but just the way that Tony's kind of marketing and positioning Vegas in his whole recruiting pitch is something I'm a huge fan of and something that I complained about with the last two staffs.
Yeah, we're all in agreement with that. It's been great. It's injected some much-needed life and energy, but I don't know that they, like, clearly have advantages that they didn't before. Maybe, you know, perception a little bit. I think this season is helping with that. I think if they can continue it, especially with a big statement victory here on Friday.
On ESPN, he's going to have them ready to go on ESPN2.
ESPN2.
$300,000 check.
Yep, Rebels finally getting paid from the Mountain West TV deal. The first time and potentially only the Halloween game against Boise State, which is the next time they return to Sam Boyd Stadium. That is still a flex game. We will find out. I think the window is 16 days out from that, so we'll find out at some point this week whether that's going to be on ESPN or ESPN2, which would be a $500,000 bonus for both UNLV and the Broncos, or if it's on ESPNU or streaming on ESPN3, then they get nothing. So another chance for the program there. And unlike in recent years when I completely expected them to get flexed to ESPN3 or something like that, I think Sanchez has the personality, and Boise State is having the season that this could end up being a game that ESPN actually wants.
Especially if they go into Fresno and put up some points. Which
yeah.
I expect Tony to have them ready to go. He knows the marketing of being on television and how important Friday's game is. And I know he also wants to finish strong, because when this whole thing is done in about 6 weeks, he's going to go back up and he's got to tighten up a recruiting class. And you could see where, if he could get some guys in the program to fit more into his system, or just more talent across the board, where this thing has the potential to pop, considering the league, like we said, is a historic low.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I need to do more looking into this, the exact timeline of when ESPN has to pick for that Halloween game, because sitting here looking at it now, I would think, like you said, a huge – if UNLV is able to win big, I think that could really help – their case. I also have to look at what ESPN's other options are. But what are you expecting kind of out of this game, Kiefer?
Fresno or Boise? I'm still thinking about Boise. I think that sets up really well because what Boise's doing right now and the games they have coming up. They're playing. I mean, UNLV's might be their toughest game after Utah State for the next month. They play New Mexico and Wyoming.
Yeah, the Wyoming game in 2 weeks. What's the number going to be on that? I wrote in my picks column last week over under 32.5, and I think I was short by about 10 points.
I would say over that for sure.
Yeah,
I was going to guess just like 39 off the top of my head, but that could be wrong.
It might be like a 42-45 type of thing.
That's this weekend.
Because I know you don't pick Fresno. What could get in UNLV's way? And we don't know the quarterback situation yet, so we don't know whether it's going to be Decker or Palandek. But what do you see as potential stumbling blocks for them this week?
You know, I know they went on the road and beat Reno, and very impressive. It was great to get the cannon red. But it's still just tough for me, even with UNLV. I love what Tony Sanchez is doing, New Era. It's tough to just expect them to win on the road. I mean, when's the last time that this team won, or they probably did the year they went to a bowl, won two games on the road?
2013, they won multiple games on the road.
But it's very often. It's not very often, excuse me.
They had a 30-game losing streak on the road or whatever.
It was getting up there.
So Fresno State, I just know they've been terrible. I haven't followed them that closely. They still, until maybe this week or last week, they were still juggling the three quarterbacks, right? I mean, they couldn't decide on who they wanted. I know the offense has been pretty much a disaster. Maybe settling on one guy, they could play a little bit better. I mean, at some point, they're going to look okay. It could be this weekend. They're at home. UNLV looks way better on paper, but it just scares me a little bit going into a place where they historically have not been very good.
And I think for me, what holds me back about, be totally all in this week on UNLV is when you have a team that relies on young players and inexperienced players, inconsistency is obviously part of the equation.
Yeah.
And you just don't know. They might be just gassed from the Reno celebration, the overtime to San Jose, short week, having to travel. You know, that's asking a lot of a group of young and inexperienced players who you could argue feel pretty darn good about themselves still because of the cannon game.
I think that's a good point. And yet, I guess I just kind of lean on the same feeling that I know Case has, and I think, Ray, you agree. Just we don't think Fresno is any good. And his first time on national TV like this, now the games earlier this year were on Big Ten Network. And what was the Northern Illinois game on? Do you remember offhand?
CBS Sports.
Okay. Yeah. So ESPN2, I think it's probably a little bigger thing. Or at least considered a bigger deal by the players and the staff, and also having Friday night there to be showcased. I think Sanchez relishes in an opportunity like that. So I'm expecting them to win by a couple of touchdowns. But those are all legit concerns, Ray, and I would adjust my expectations based on the quarterback situation and what we find out as far as that goes. But that is what we will attempt to determine and parse throughout the week on the football side. As I mentioned, men's basketball has the Mountain West Media Days in town. Rebels Day is Tuesday, so we'll have coverage from there as Pat McCaw and Jerome Seegers and Coach Dave Rice are expected to attend. Everything on LasVegasSun.com/Rebels. No yelling this week, but I'm sure we'll figure out something to argue about next week. For Case, for Ray, I am Taylor. We'll talk to you guys later.